Good morning, Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. If you have a cat, if you know someone who has a cat, you will love the conversation I'm about to have with certified cat behavior consultant and also a PhD behaviorist. Now that's fancy. Her name is Dr. Michael Delgado, and the book that she wrote is so important, called Play With Your Cat. It seems like it's something you wouldn't even need to say, but I think, Dr. Delgado, that actually many people don't play with their cats or play with their cats in a way that may not be beneficial to the cat or the human-animal bond. Is that why you wrote the book in the first place?
Yes, I agree with you completely. People have good intentions, but they often don't realize the why and the how behind play. And, you know, as a behavior consultant, I'm sure you've experienced talking to cat owners and they're like, oh, my cat doesn't play, or there's toys everywhere and he just ignores them. Those are things I heard over and over and over again from my clients and from people at the shelter or people I would talk to at parties. And it occurred to me that they didn't really understand what play meant. And when I think of play, of course, and the focus of this book is what we call interactive play, right? And so that is an interaction between a human and a cat with a wand toy in between them, typically. What people would often do is maybe toss a ball for their cat, or think that leaving what we would call solo play toys, like those ping pong balls or fuzzy mice, around was playing. And what I define interactive play as is moving a wand toy or similar in a way that mimics or promotes a hunting experience for your cat. So that's, I think, where people didn't necessarily get the full memo about what it means to play with their cat.
All right. A lot to unpack there. All right. So let's start at the very, very beginning. Why is it necessary that cats have an opportunity to play, and best that, well, you know what? Let me say it this way. And you write about this in the book as well. Interactive play, you point out the necessity to do that. But that doesn't mean you also shouldn't leave ping pong balls out or little mice toys out for the cat to play on its own. Or sometimes you could toss those toys and play with the cat that way too. So there are all kinds of ways to play with cats. But why is what you call interactive play, you being on one end of the wand or fishing pole type device and maybe a feather fabric or something being on the other end, why is that so important?
Yeah, it's a great question. And you addressed, you know, cats do have environmental needs, you know, or sometimes we call it enrichment, but I think really now we're trying to promote this as things that are really important for cats to be healthy and happy, physically, behaviorally, emotionally. And interactive play is part of a kind of wellness package for our cats. It's one component of having a healthy environment for our cats. And to me, it's so important because it allows our cats to express a natural behavior for them, and that is hunting. We don't often talk about it that way, but it really is. If you look at the research and how cat play develops in cats and what motivates play in cats, the things that we see, the behaviors, the things that inspire play in cats, like hunger and how similar the toys are to prey, really point to this overlap in play and predatory behavior to the extent that we can basically say they serve the same function for cats. It's just that cats are directing that behavior towards a toy instead of a small animal. So one, it's a natural behavior for cats. Two, it's a very important behavior for cats. So, you know, for better or worse, cats who are outside do hunt. And, you know, a lot of us promote keeping cats indoors to keep them safe and to, you know, prevent excessive predation on wildlife, et cetera. But when we do that, we do take away their ability to express that hunting behavior. And this is a strong instinct that we've never bred out of cats through domestication. We've never said, please stop hunting. We've just said, please keep being cute and cuddly, and we'll accept you into our lives despite the mass killing that you might do if we let you outside. So when we play with our cats with interactive toys, we are giving them a way to express that hunting behavior in a way that's satisfying to them It's fun for them. It's providing opportunities for exercise and mental stimulation, promoting good mental health, reducing stress. So there's lots of potential benefits to it. And again, it kind of gets back to that embracing our cats as the predators that they are, but giving them an outlet in it that's more socially acceptable, I guess. And hopefully fun for us too.
Well, right. You know, not a conversation for us today, but when we declaw cats, which I know you're opposed to, and I am vehemently opposed to, right. But the cats will still go through the process of scratching because they're hardwired to do it. So let's say an outdoor cat that's in part of a trap, neuter, release program of some sort, and the cats are fed and they're fed well, or a cat that's an indoor-outdoor cat, and that cat, I think I almost said fat cat, so let's go with it. That cat is overweight or obese. I didn't mean to say it, but I said it. So, all right. And that cat goes outdoors too. Even those cats, effectively or not, will still hunt and sometimes bring back whatever they got for us. And you explain in the book that that is sometimes misunderstood as well. Can you talk about all of that?
Yeah. So, you know, and the other thing too is this book is not just for indoor cats. It's for anybody with a cat they have a relationship with. We actually, there's research that suggests that playing with your cats, even if they have outdoor access, does reduce their hunting behavior. So we're substituting maybe an acceptable form of hunting, you know, for a less acceptable form. So all cats can benefit from play. And I, again, talk about that in the book. So I didn't want this to just be like, oh, this is like just for those poor, deprived indoor cats. But, you know, we do know that we have problems with cat management, whether it's our the way we manage them at home and making sure that they stay a healthy weight, or, you know, letting cats proliferate outside. Of course, the book is not about playing with feral cats per se, because those cats are feral, truly feral cats are not going to want to interact with humans so much. But, it, you know, it is really kind of a holistic approach to, you know, how do we interact with our cats? What kind of relationship do we have with our cats, regardless of their lifestyle or whether they go outside or not? So I do want to emphasize that there are benefits for playing, of playing for cats who go outside as well.
All right. But you also write in the book a great deal of it's not only that you play with your cat and what you play with. We talked about those things, but how you play with your cat. What? There's a right and a wrong way to do that? We'll talk about that. Yeah, she says yes. We'll talk about that with the author of Play With Your Cat. Did I say that right, Michael?
Yes.
Yeah, Dr. Delgado says yes.
Yes.
The essential. You didn't say that with much conviction. The Essential Guide to Interactive Play for a Happier, Healthier Feline when we come back. Dr. Michael Delgado is the author of the book. I'll try it again. See if I impress her. Play With Your Cat! Is that better?
Yay! Yeah.
The Essential Guide.
I need you to do my cheerleading for me. You're like much more enthusiastic than I am, obviously.
Well, I am because this book is so important. The Essential Guide to Interactive Play for a Happier, Healthier Feline. So, all right. You say it matters how we play. So you've got that interactive cat toy, fishing pole type toy. You say wand toy. Potato, potato, right? So you're playing on one end of the stick, essentially, and on the other is a piece of fabric or a feather or feathers. But we just hold it up and wave it back and forth. There's much more to it than that, huh?
Yeah, I'm really trying to encourage people to, you know, I think, okay, so I do have like specific techniques to try and advice on how to move toys. But I also want to encourage people to kind of think like a scientist and test things out. Because, of course, you know, whenever you say anything about cats, people are like, well, not my cat, you know. So there's a lot of exceptions to the rules. And there's always going to be a cat who doesn't like a particular type of toy. So I really did try to impress upon people the importance of trying things and seeing if they work. And if they don't work, try something different. But there are some moves that I've personally seen like over and over again are successful with most cats. So I'm really trying to bring people like my greatest hits from, you know, almost 25 years of working with cats, And because I love playing with cats, so I really enjoy it. And so I do enjoy trying different things and just seeing like, oh, does this work? Do they like this? So yeah, I do give specific techniques on how to move toys. And I think the main thing is that, you know, we don't want to scare cats. And so that does happen if you have like a big feather and you're waving it around really intensely, like that's going to scare some kitties. You want to really just think about, again, we're trying to get our cats to hunt. What would bring that out in a cat? What would they be doing if they were outside watching birds? If you've ever watched your cat, you know, even if your cat's indoors and you watch them kind of looking at what's going on outside, they often will go through some of the motions of like the squatting and stalking kind of part where they're really focused. But they often don't get the part where they get to catch and kill the prey. But we want to be moving the toy in ways that encourage that. So yeah, don't scare the cat. Move the toy like a bird or a mouse would do. So really thinking about what those animals would do if they knew they were being hunted. So they might try to escape. They might try to, you know, very subtly hide somewhere. They'd be doing bird and mouse things. So we can move toys in ways that simulate birds and mice. So I go over that in the book quite a bit about kind of breaking down, like, what do mice do? How do, like, bugs fly around typically? Like, they're not just zooming around, right? They're landing, and they like windows. And so really thinking about what might really simulate a more natural hunting experience for your cat, but we're just doing it with toys.
You know, I went to some pet product show years ago, and they said, this is this great toy. And it was a giant rat thing that automatically, you've seen it, I guess, and you turn it on. And I said, this is going to scare. I did tell the manufacturer that, who did not like what I had to say, I'm sure. I said, this is going to scare cats. Yeah. I mean, it was as big as a cat and it looked like a rat and made some squeaky sound. On the other hand, a little mouse toy at the end of a stick or something is a completely different story. And you talk about the feathers. Yes, the cats are going to hunt, for better or worse, if outdoors, they're hardwired to do it. Small birds. Mm-hmm. But they're not going to hunt a bird of prey who actually prey on cats.
Hunt them.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
So think about that, both with when purchasing the toy and how you play with the cat. Some cats, and it depends on the individual cat, will actually be scared by some of these things, which is exactly what we don't want. The other thing you write about, and I'm glad you do a great deal, is safety. So we have a cat, our own cat, for example. We have to be careful. The feathers on the feather toys, this cat will pull them out and maybe potentially ingest them, which means a visit to the veterinarian, potentially even surgery for that, you know? So that is absolutely why with a lot of these toys, I think they ought to, when you're not playing with the cat, be sure they go behind a closed door for safety reasons.
Yes. So I will comment on both things you brought up. One is about the toys being scary. And, you know, I'm a scientist. I'm a researcher. I do include a lot of science in the book in a hopefully very user-friendly way. But
it is.
We do know that cats are afraid of rats overall. They're not great ratters unless the rats are small. So there's plenty of research showing that cats are more interested in small prey. They're more interested in small toys than the giant, like, mega rat thing that's going, I mean, could be potentially harmful to cats. So, you know, rats will fight back and they, you know, they don't fight clean, right? They're going to bite and scratch and try to survive. So, so cats are naturally wary of interacting with larger prey. So that's just something to keep in mind when we are playing with them or buying toys for them. And unfortunately, a lot of the manufacturers of cat toys don't talk to people like us before they make the toy. And so then after you give them feedback at a show and they're like, I don't like your feedback because you're telling me the toy sucks. but they didn't kind of think about the science and what we know about cat hunting behavior to guide them. And so that's one issue. Regarding the safety, and I did have to, I mean, I put the safety stuff in the book so much that they were like, now you're repeating yourself. You have to take some of it out. So but the safety is so important because we are talking about toys that involve strings, wires, and possibly removable parts, all of which can present a hazard to our cats. So it's very, very important that, again, the thought of interactive play is you are holding one end of the toy and your cat is playing with the other end. And when you are not holding the toy, it goes in a closet, it goes in a bin, it goes in a box. It is out of reach for your cat because I have heard horror stories. I've talked to people who have lost their cats because their cat did get injured, strangled on a toy. And of course, if you talk to any veterinary clinic, they will tell you, yes, we see cats coming in for ingesting things like string. And the surgery is not cheap. It can be life-threatening. So you really do want to be conscious of the fact that you need to be the, you know, the person in charge and put the toys away when you are not using them with your cat. So these are not things that are generally safe to leave alone with your cat. Ping pong balls, yes. Fuzzy mice, yes. Springs, yes. As long as your cat has a proven history of not trying to eat and ingest those items, then you know, there are toys that are appropriate to leave out with our cats, but they do not involve strings or wires or anything like that.
And interactive means you're participating. And if you're not there, or an adult, better put, is not there to participate, then yeah, absolutely, I agree very much. Put away those toys. Mm-hmm. The name of the book is called Play With Your Cat, for Christ's sakes. Well, that's not exactly what it says. It says
that part is not in there.
No, the editor might
maybe
not have.
Maybe it's implied.
Well, it should be. The Essential Guide to Interactive Play for a Happier, Healthier Feline. Now, I want to talk about, you keep saying hunt, hunt, hunt. Well, if the cat were given the opportunity to hunt, hopefully the cat would periodically catch whatever the cat is hunting in the first place, right? I want to talk about why that is so incredibly important, allowing the cat to catch. But you don't want them to eat those feathers or the fabric at the end or whatever it is. So what do you do? And we'll answer that when we come back with Dr. Michael Delgado. Once again, the name of the book, Play With Your Cat! Next on WGN. Next week on the show, veterinary behaviorist Dr. Chris Pockel talks about spring break. Well, sort of. He talks about traveling with your pets, as many of you are going to be doing just that. And we talk mostly about car travel and what can be done for pets that do have some fear, anxiety, and stress. Based right here in Chicago, they were featured on Shark Tank. That's Mella Pet Care. Ben Seidman will be here to talk about their new innovative technologies, which I love. One is a way easy way to take way easy way. Is that what I just said? To take your dog's or cat's temperature. Another is a way to not only weigh your dog or cat, but to determine the fat content and how that is relevant for dogs in particular based on breed. For example, greyhounds shouldn't have a lot of fat. That's absolutely normal. For other dogs, the same might not be true. Anyway, we'll talk about all of that next week. Dr. Michael Delgado, who I've known for years, has also authored scientific papers, published very fancy publications. But this book is for all of you if you have a cat. It's called Play With Your Cat! And it's the essential guide to interactive play for a happier, healthier feline. It says here this is an indispensable addition to any cat lover's library. Jackson Galaxy says that. All sorts of people are applauding this book. And, you know, in a way, it's surprising that this book or a book like it wasn't written years ago by somebody, you know, by me. I wish I would have thought of it because it is so incredibly important. And you go into great detail. So one of the things you write is that, yes, when you play with an interactive toy, let the cat every now and again catch it. I remember going into a home, Dr. Delgado, years ago where the person said, and I was watching the person play with their cat. Well, I never let the cat win. Well, it's not about winning or losing exactly, is it?
No, and I've seen the same thing. And one of the things when I'm working with clients, especially remotely, is I'll ask them to send me a video of them playing with their cat so I can kind of see what they're doing. And a lot of times you see people kind of dangling the toy out of the cat's reach. The poor cat is like, you know, keeps jumping up and trying to catch the toy, never does, and then gives up pretty quickly because they're not getting the full experience of play. And we're very visual, so we often forget the other senses. But of course, the tactile part of hunting and playing is very important to our cats. They want to grab the feathers, grab the bird. They want to put it in their mouth. They want to feel it moving around in their with their whiskers. And, you know, they just have this incredible physical body that's designed to hunt and detect prey and have multiple, like, you know, backup plans. So if you can't see it, you can feel it. And if you can't, you know, feel it, you can hear it, etc. So yes, we want to let the cats have the complete hunting experience and grab the toy and put it in their mouth and hopefully not to eat it, but to, you know, bite it and again, feel it with their whiskers. So if you are making the play too hard, it's going to be frustrating. I mean, think about when we're learning something, you know, we always want to have some success early on, right? Or we get frustrated. We don't want to do it. I mean, I can speak as someone who's like, you know, learn to play instruments or learn new games. Like I'm a big board game player and the first game always sucks because I don't know what I'm doing. But, you know, as you get better, you enjoy it more. And so for our cats, it's like, you don't want to make it too easy, right? You don't want to dangle the toy like right in front of their nose. You want to allow them to stalk and pounce and go through all of that. But you also don't want it to be like a wah, wah, like you never caught it. So yeah, we do want to really, and you know, plenty of people, including, you know, Jackson have talked about the hunting cycle and the, you know, stalk, catch, eat, groom, sleep kind of behaviors that we can induce in our cats. So, you know, the other thing is thinking about the after the play, like we're really trying to play to induce a sense of satisfaction and hopefully relaxation. So allowing your cat to have that complete cycle through the behavior of, you know, playing or hunting from stalking and pouncing to eating, grooming and sleeping is a great benefit of play. You know, it's, you've heard the adage, you know, a tired dog is a happy dog or a good dog, right? So sure. We want to think the same way about our cats.
Speaking of which, a couple of things come to mind. First of all, tell me what happens when cats actually do catch something. You write about this in your book, Play with the Cat, with your cat.
Yeah.
Actually catch something. Let's say the cat is lucky enough to find a mouse in the house. And tell me what happens from the cat's paw to the brain when the cat catches something real.
Yeah. So cats have all these like amazingly sensitive parts of their body that are sending signals to their brain. And this includes their claws, their paw pads. They've got whiskers on the back of their legs. Their teeth are innervated to help detect what's going on when they're chomping on a prey. Their whiskers are like this amazing, like satellite dish of like extended parts of their face. It actually like allows them to detect things, you know, inches away from their face. They can detect air movements and of course movement when they're handling prey. And cats don't have great vision up close. So once they actually catch a prey animal, they're not using their vision to interact and kind of complete the kill. They're using their other senses, primarily, you know, their teeth, whiskers, and claws. So it's really important to kind of think about how things shift for them during that play cycle. And there's lots, I mean, cat hunting behavior has actually been studied pretty extensively. And we also, you know you might observe things like if your cat hunts, they might bring something back home. It's very common for cats to basically catch things and bring them somewhere they feel safer to eat. So they're not necessarily bringing you a present. They're just going through this natural behavior of like, I should carry this to somewhere else that I feel safer. And maybe that they feel safer because you're there, but they're not necessarily trying to feed you or anything like that. But that instinct to carry things that they've captured away from the source that they captured it at is probably also related to why some cats fetch, right? So there's kind of this part of the hunting cycle that gets kind of stereotyped and they're like, okay, I must like bring this back and like enable this, you know, cycle of fetching behavior for some cats.
All right. So based on what you said, I want to talk about a couple things. First of all, is there a right time of day, I mean, or a best time of day to play with your cat? Because cats do like consistency. So if you do it at 3 a.m, every morning, your cat will at some point in time say, let's do this every morning at 3 a.m. That might not be for us, I don't think a lot of cats would mind, but for us, it might not be the best time. I also want to talk about laser lights. Based on everything you just said, and I will tell you a story. Yes, Dr. Michael Delgado, you will hear a story about laser lights. All of that when we come back. The name of the book? Play with your cat! You have to! It's a law! The governor says so! The Essential Guide to Interactive Play for a Happier, Healthier Feline. Dr. Michael Delgado, back with you on WGN next. Dr. Michael Delgado, the author of Play with Your Cat! The Essential Guide to Interactive Play for a Happier, Healthier Feline. All right, so for several years, and it still is a thing, laser light toys. And I'm talking about, you know what I'm talking about, those little red or green dots. You press the button. And I'll tell you what I said. It was brought up at a veterinary behavior meeting. And I'm not a veterinary, I'm not a veterinarian, and I'm not a veterinary behaviorist. But happily, I was invited to this meeting. And I'll tell you what I spoke up and said in a moment. And you'll tell me if it makes sense or not. I was so intimidated to say it because here I am with all these brilliant people. And because the thinking was, it is so frustrating for the cat never to be able to actually catch that little red or green dot. Even if the paw goes on it, the cat knows, based on what you said earlier, that the cat's brain and paw pads are connected in a way we can't even quite understand because we're not wired that way. But cats know whether they've caught something or not. And there's no way the cat could ever catch a living red or green dot because they're not living, right? Not to mention the fact that when they first came out, you know, people were, and they probably still are, kids are shining it in their own eyes, little kids, and maybe in their cat's eyes and playing, you know, with the dot on the ceiling where the cat dancing on the ceiling is something cats might want to do but really cannot do. So all of those things, and the behaviorists were going to come out flatly against it. And I said, well, let's say there's adult supervision and they're playing fairly, they're playing properly with the cat, and they drop randomly a treat on where that little red dot is throughout the game. Then maybe it's not such a bad idea because there are benefits for cats who love it. And one is simply exercise, which I'll talk about in a moment.
What do you
think of that notion?
I mean, I think you bring up really good points. And, you know, I'd say that my take on laser pointers in the book is probably not what everybody expected because you hear so many people that are 100% never use a laser pointer. And that's not my take. I do think that you can laze responsibly, you know, and that's really what I encourage is use it minimally. So it's not my favorite. And I think the main problem is that it's like kind of the lazy person's toy. And it's for people that don't want to get up off the couch, right? And so, you know, the main thing is, well, and the red dot doesn't look red to our cats, right? It looks kind of like just white, gray light. So
that's a very
red. Like
yeah, that's a very, very good point, actually, that I hadn't thought about myself. But you're correct, of course. What about dropping a treat periodically through the game and at the end of it?
Love it. I mean, I definitely, one of my cats, she does love the laser. We use it very rarely, but we do use it sometimes with her. And so, you know, I do recommend things like making sure it's not the only way you play with your cat, making sure that you follow kind of the rules of physics so that the light doesn't just disappear in the middle of the wall, but you move it so it goes under a door, out a window or something that would happen naturally with prey. So it's not kind of defying like the rules of what happens in our universe. And alternating with a real toy, incorporating treats as a way to, again, complete the hunting cycle, let them have a little bit of the tactile experience. I mean, that said, like, I think if you never use a laser pointer with your cat, you're fine. But if your cat is one of those that really gets motivated by the laser, there's very little evidence that cats who do play with a laser get the same level of light obsession that is a concern with dogs. So, so there's fewer, you know, I think there's fewer issues at this point. Now, is it possible that we will see more compulsive behaviors if lasers are used excessively? possibly, which is why I recommend occasional responsible use of the laser pointer if you must use it at all.
Okay. Now, I want to talk about when you play with the cat, because cats, as you point out several times throughout the book, if you're consistent with fill in the blank, whatever it is, the cats that. What we do, we have one cat who's now, I don't know, about a year and a half old.
Nice.
And still very playful. His name is Groucho.
Yes.
And by the way, you could find Groucho on TikTok, Groucho_the_funny_cat.
Oh.
Yes.
Okay.
So
might get me on TikTok now.
Well, you could tell me how I'm doing. But we play with Groucho, first of all, on purpose, not every night, because, you may disagree with that, but I don't want Groucho to say, I expect it. So if we come home from the theater at 11:30 at night, and frankly, I just want to go to bed. I don't, Groucho still goes to that door and pounds on that door where his toys are, but I don't want to always say, okay, I'm going to play with you because I may not feel like it, especially if I've had a few glasses of wine before I can, you know. So I may not, you have to think about me too. So I don't want Groucho so accustomed to it that it becomes almost an obsession, but almost every night we do. And it's usually 10:30 at night. And my thinking was that, first of all, I'm consistent. Secondly, this is before Groucho goes to sleep, which you could talk
and
about.
Before you go to sleep.
Right, exactly. Yes. Done on purpose. Also, we play with Groucho in every room in the house. Not as much in the kitchen, but for no rhyme or reason particularly, but never in our bedroom. And much to my surprise, you actually write about that in the book. So can you talk about all of what I just brought up?
All of that, yes. And of course, I do talk about all of this in the book. So, you know, I do encourage people to make a habit out of play, because we know that, like, you know, so much about getting things done and making a commitment to behavior change involves like making it a habit, right? It's like flossing your teeth. So I do encourage people to, of course, you know, play with their cat daily if they can, but it doesn't have to be like an hour a day. Like, you know, 3 to 5 minutes a couple times a day can make a huge impact on your cat's welfare. So I really try to emphasize that this is not like a like giant commitment. I mean, if you have kittens, you do need to play with them more. You have young cats, you do need to play with them more. But making it part of your routine, I think, does help people continue to do it. So at my house, we always play after dinner. It's just like one of us starts putting the dishes in the dishwasher and my boyfriend or me will start playing with the cats. And then the other person joins when the dishwasher is loaded. So it's really like part of our routine. Do we sometimes have to skip it because we go out for dinner or we're, you know, go to a concert or whatever? Of course, like, you know, we all do the best we can. And maybe you play with your cat before you go out if you can for a few minutes, but occasionally things do not happen, and that's okay. That doesn't mean you should give up playing altogether just because you can't do it perfectly every single day. As far as the when, it really, you know, does partly depend on the cat. And, you know, cats kind of have this reputation for being nocturnal, which you, of course, you know, is not true. They're active at dawn and dusk, which the term for that is crepuscular. So sometimes we can take advantage of the natural zoomies periods that our cats have and play with them then to kind of maximize the interest and benefits. Other times, you know, again, I work from home, so I might just take a stretch break and get out a wand toy and just play with one of my cats for a few minutes, and that works very well. But, you know, we do know that cats do appreciate routine and things happening on a consistent basis. So I encourage routine to the extent possible, but, you know, really it is like what works for you, what works for your cat, and are you trying to address something like you are as far as like encouraging your cat to sleep all night? To me, it's very important that my cats do not wake me up in the middle of the night pouncing on my feet or meowing or anything. So I've worked very hard to make sure my cats sleep when I sleep. And part of that does include playing with them in the evening and often feeding them, you know, at bedtime, my bedtime, so that they are nice and tired and feel satisfied. Go to bed, sleep all night. So and you do want to think about things like, you know, if your cats are naturally rambunctious, you probably don't want to play with them in your bedroom or your bed, because that's going to be kind of a stimulus that says, hey, I can play here. So it does depend on the cat. It depends on the situation. But I do encourage people to try to set up some routine that works for them that they can kind of stick to most of the time.
Well, we're running out of time here. How Not to Play with Your Cat. That could be your next book. I don't know. And so many people still use their fingers, which makes me cringe. Yeah, what do you think?
I know. Yeah, I'm cringing now while we're talking about it, right? So, you know, as behaviorists, we always try to reinforce good behavior and not punish people for bad behavior. So I try to really emphasize what to do in the hopes that the, you know, other behaviors will fade away. But yeah, there are some things that you know, I don't recommend doing with your cat. And a big one is wrestling or using your hands or body parts as playthings.
So that'll be Dr. Delgado's next book, Don't Wrestle with Your Cat. This book is called Play with Your Cat. For Christ's sakes, you have to do it. It's the law. That's not exactly, I don't think, the name.
It's a new, you've come up with a new subtitle for my book.
Thank you very much, Dr. Michael Delgado. Great job. The Essential Guide to Interactive Play for a Happier, Healthier Feline. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Steve.
It is Dog Bite Prevention Week. This is the kickoff for it. I'll be doing a free webinar with the American Veterinary Medical Association. For the link to that, check out my website, which is stevedale.tv. And all of us, a group of experts, will be talking about dog bite prevention. Prevention is the word, you know, because most dog bites are preventable. Having said that, the number of dog bites, including fatal dog bites, is on the rise. Now, the number of dogs has been on the rise for years, several years now since the pandemic. However, the number of dog bites percentage-wise, exceeds the number of dogs that we've seen an increase of in America. So what's going on? And what can we do to prevent that? And I'll talk for a moment about prevention now. So we've learned from the American Veterinary Medical Association for years, which is the right thing for sure. You're walking down the street, you see someone with a dog you don't know, ask that person, the dog handler, can I pet your dog? That makes perfect sense. However, we need to do one thing more. We need to ask the dog. Really, some dogs, it's clear. I mean, the person says, sure, you can pet my dog, and you reach down toward the dog, and the dog backs up, barks at you, snarls, and growls. Who in the world would pet that dog, of course? However, sometimes that dog might just back up. Sometimes that dog might just look the other way. Sometimes the signs are so incredibly subtle. We need to better speak dog. We need to understand and respect what dogs are trying to tell us. Not only can we lower the number of dog bites, I do believe, but also it's just the right thing to do for welfare, for dog welfare. We will talk more about that in the webinar we're about to do, I'm sure, because if no one else brings it up, I will. It's kind of my idea. I've been talking about this for a little bit of time now and begun to speak with veterinary professionals about it, and will continue to speak with all of you about better understanding and respecting what our dogs are telling us.